gone fishing by a shady, wady pool.
Shangri-La, really-la.
I'm wishing I could be that.
This is Seattle's morning news. When a ship called the Diamond Knots went down near Port Angeles in 1947, it was carrying some precious cargo, canned salmon, a unique salvation effort 72 years ago, and the current search for artifacts from that wreck are the subject of historian Felix Bunnell's story today. Felix, brought to you by the King County Library System. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it was not long after midnight on August 13th, 1947, when the Diamond Knot, a 338-foot ship loaded with 7.4 million cans of salmon and a crew of 38, was returning from Alaska and headed through the Strait of Juan de Fuca. It was foggy with zero visibility in the middle of the night when something went wrong. Another ship, the 455-foot Fenn Victory, was headed out of the strait, about 6 miles off of Edith's Hook at broadside of the Diamond Knot. The Fenn Victory punched a pretty big hole in the side of the Diamond Knot, and the two ships were stuck together and adrift. A distress call went out just after 2 a.m., and about 90 minutes later, a Foss tug from Port Angeles arrived on the scene. The Diamond Knot was taking on water and was listing. Retired Foss employee and unofficial Foss historian Mike Scally told me what happened next.
They got a tow line up on the stern and were towing as quick as they could to get it onto the beach around Crescent Bay. They towed for a couple hours, and at one point the ship continued to get lower in the water. They took the crew off, and before they could get it beached, the ship sank.
So the Diamond Knot went down in about 135 feet of water, about a half mile offshore, right in the mouth of Crescent Bay. Now, the value of the cargo in 1947, those 7.4 million cans of red salmon, was $3.5 million. That's about $40 million in 2019. And this is right after World War II, so there was food shortages. So this wasn't just a monetary value. It had value just culturally anyway. So the insurance company, Fireman's Fund, paid out the claim to the owner, but then they went about salvaging all that canned salmon to try and recoup their losses. To do the job, they built a giant barge-mounted vacuum machine, and they sent men down in those cool old diving suits to cut open the side of the Diamond Knot and vacuum up the millions of cans. That work lasted from August to the end of October. Fortunately for everybody, Fireman's Fund made a promotional film all about the project.
Out they come. Torn and partially disintegrated carcass. Then golden cans of salmon, thousands of them, up from the bottom of the sea.
I wish you had a documentary like that for every story I ever did. The salvage operation was a technical marvel, with the biggest challenge being how to find a way to anchor the vacuum barge in place over the wreck with all the wind and the tides and currents. Now, alongside the vacuum barge, they would moor cargo barges that could hold 300 to 500,000 cans. Because when that siphon was working well, that vacuum, it pumped 1,000 gallons of water and 800 cans a minute. So over the course of the project, they took about 20 barges full of cans to canneries in Seattle, Friday Harbor, and Semiahmoo. Now, at the canneries, they built a fairly complex mechanized system of transferring the salmon from the old cans and repacking in completely new cans. To make sure the old salmon hadn't gone bad, they used an infallible device called highly trained girls.
Here, a double row of highly trained girls transferred the fish from the original can to a new can. The fish and empty cans were then carefully smelled to detect any evidence of spoilage, which might have taken place without the cans showing this condition.
Yeah, so to make this abundantly clear, they took that old salmon off the bottom of Crescent Bay, they repacked it, recooked it, and sold it. And of about the roughly 500 million cans they recovered, about 73% was able to be repackaged. Now, that's where Puget Sound Maritime Historical Society comes into the story. They have some artifacts from the Diamond Knot that divers recovered back in the 1970s, and they're planning to put an exhibit in Mohai next year, sometime late next year. And what Puget Sound Maritime Director Alicia Barnes would really like to find are some examples of the various labels that were applied to the new cans of Diamond Knot salmon. She has a photo of at least one variety of label that was dedicated to Foss tugs for their role in towing the ship and in helping with the salvage operation.
The salmon can labels that they recanned them with, it says Diamond Knot salmon, twice caught, twice canned, twice labeled, twice packed, given to you with our best wishes, twice over. And it has the Foss Always Ready logo off to the side of that little phrase.
Yeah, everyone loves to have salmon cooked twice. You can't beat it. Once is never enough. Now, she says there might be one of these Foss labels tucked away somewhere in the Puget Sound Maritime collection, but they haven't been able to find it. What Alicia and Mike Scally are hoping to, is someone out there might have hung on to one of these special cans or at least the labels. If there's a listener out there who thinks they might have one, text me now at 98973. It'll probably have the name Diamond Knot somewhere on the label. Now, I was just about to turn off my tape recorder when Alicia told me one more tasty morsel about the Diamond Knot salmon label mystery.
The only other thing is that there's sort of an urban legend that some of the canned salmon that wasn't deemed good enough for human consumption but wasn't completely off, was recanned and sold as cat food.
Oh.
I don't know if it's true, but it's a rumor out there anyway. If anybody has proof of that, that would be awesome to find. Yeah.
How would you know the difference between the cat food and the twice-cooked human food? And again, people were hungry after World War II. So if you know, if you have a Diamond Knot label somewhere in your basement, let me know or let text us here at 98973.
All right. Thanks, Felix. Christmas time can be especially tough for a kid with a mom or a dad in prison. Last night, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Puget Sound and Seahawks defensive end Jadeveon Clowney teamed up to bring some early holiday cheer for kids in that situation, and Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott was there.
I was, and there was a ton of excitement, a lot of very happy kids at the South Center Target last night as more than two dozen kids and their mentors from Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Puget Sound came out for the Jingle-a-thon with Jadeveon event, where they got to hang out with the football star, have a little dinner, and there was a nice surprise at the end. Now, all 25 of these kids are kids who either have a parent in prison or one that just got out. Seahawks defensive end Jadeveon Clowney knows firsthand what that's like. His dad was in lockup for 11 years, leaving his mother on her own to raise her kids. And when it came to Christmas time, Clowney's mom had her own calendar. The reason?
Money. So it's been always there. My mom always get money around tax time. So it was like February, right? And then we used to celebrate Christmas around that time.
Yeah, but he says he didn't mind about the Christmas calendar change. As far as growing up with a dad behind bars.
It was rough. Me and my sister grew up in one single home for a long time. But my mom, she worked extremely hard growing up. She did everything I can ever ask for. I used to watch her come home all the time from work, sweaty and stuff. I was like, Mom, I'm going to do something one day to just take this all away.
So he stayed focused on his football and...
I was able to retire her the minute I got drafted for the NFL. And that's all I ever wanted to do was take care of my mom. Half the reason why I do what I do.
How did that feel?
Oh, man, it felt wonderful, man. When I call and FaceTime her every other day when she hit me up, I'd be like, just watch her smile on the phone. Like, what you doing? She'd be like, whatever I want to do, you know. And just not answer to nobody. Just she don't have to go in and clock in and do a job for nobody else. And that's all I ever wanted to do, take care of her.
But Clowney wasn't done using his NFL career to give back. Creating the Jadeveon Clowney Help in Time Foundation 5 years ago to help kids growing up the way he did, like the Jingle-a-thon last night, where 13-year-old Kamari Harper could barely contain her excitement.
So I'm like shaking, I'm like scared and everything. I'm like, I'm like very shaken up, and I'm happy to be here with her.
The her she's talking about is Dion, her mentor, through the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Puget Sounds program that is specifically designed for kids with parents in prison. The two were paired 5 years ago when both of Kamani's parents were in lockup.
Like, I feel like this is my whole lifeline right here, and she's the thing that keeps me going every day. And
we're definitely family, for sure. And, you know, she was a little 8-year-old girl when we got together, and she just turned 13. And we do so much together as far as even just little things like making popcorn balls for Christmas.
Or big things like the Jingle-a-thon when you get to meet NFL stars. After all of the kids and mentors got a chance to meet Jadeveon and get a few pictures, they all gathered for dinner, where Clowney came in and made the big surprise announcement.
Got to meet you guys, take pictures with you guys. I'm looking for the rest of the night and looking forward to the shopping experience we're about to do. I'm about to give each one of y'all $200 gift cards to go shopping in Target tonight to get whatever y'all want. Let's do this.
The kids were very stoked. After dinner, everybody lined up and shopping carts were doled out for the big group shopping experience where the kids were able to get whatever they wanted. And as for Jadeveon, as the kids and Jadeveon headed into the aisles with their big red shopping carts, I had one last question for him. You're going to win the Super Bowl, right?
I hope so. That's the goal. You don't do all this work for nothing. We're 10-2. Might as well win a Super Bowl while we're at it.
Why not, right?
Yeah, very, very cool moments. I know you've done stories with Seahawks players in the past, too, right? I mean,
yes.
And I know Jadeveon Clowney, this isn't his first time doing this sort of thing, like you
five
mentioned.
5 years, yeah.
When he was with the Houston Texans, mm-hmm. He's been doing this Jingle-a-thon every year since then. Very cool. And like I was saying, so you've also, of course, profiled Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. He always goes to Seattle Children's Hospital
every
as well.
Tuesday.
And then just yesterday there are reports that Russell Wilson is at a Dick's Sporting Goods, also giving out $200 gift cards to needy kids as well.
Yeah.
And then...
And as a team, the team as a whole does a lot of great stuff like this.
I was going to say, and then last week, of course, Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
He's at a grocery store at a Safeway buying people's groceries. So just a very, very cool moment from all the Seahawks players of of course. What was the reaction from the kids? I know we heard that they were super pumped up right when, you know, they handed out the gift cards. What were they looking to buy or just having?
So some, and I asked some of them. So I had some, actually all of the kids I talked to, and I didn't go shopping with them, so I don't know if they stuck to this, but they talked about buying gifts for other people. The Kamari that we just talked to here, she has a baby sister, one year old, that she wants to buy some gifts for. And, of course, her mentor, she wants to get something. In fact, she came in with a gift. When she got to do her first meet and greet with Jadeveon, she handed him a chocolate bar that she stopped and bought specifically for him. And then another kid said he was going to hand the $200 gift card off to someone else because he did not trust himself to do something responsible with it.
Wow, very appropriate for Giving Tuesday.
Yeah, and this is a great program with the Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I talked to the guy who runs it, and he said 20% of the kids in their program overall have a parent in prison and just in general. And I think it was 70% of them are likely to end up in the criminal justice system themselves. So they try to get these mentors in there, help them through anything they need, whether it's mom or dad coming home from prison, when they're gone, whatever, so that they can break that cycle.
And the Big Brothers, Big Sisters, they work with these kids for many years beyond.
Many years, too. Yes.
All right, that's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you so much for the story. Appreciate it.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.